maybe sometime by the end of this year, I will be able to tell you more clearly why I'm saying this year. To begin with, it's a story that appears in the Torah in the Sefer Shabbos. It's a story about Rav Shimon ben Yochai. So you're thinking most probably by right, it should have been said before Lag BaOmer. It's out of place, but it's not. Because ultimately what it's going to talk about is the importance of Torah and mitzvahs, and therefore it is in the mode of pre-Shavuos. Shavuos is coming, Shavuos is all about Torah and mitzvahs. There are another two reasons to begin with why I'm learning this piece of Gemara. There are parts of the Gemara that are difficult to understand. It's not a halachic piece of Gemara, it is agadic. So you have to understand that in Agada there may be a tremendous amount of depth, and we don't even see it, because you know it's sort of simple and easy to read, but there's a great deal being said there. The rabbis, in their inimitable fashion, were able to impart to us profound ideas through incidents and stories. Number two, I'm going to be making use of an interpretation of this Gemara that was written by Rav Avraham Yitzchak HaKohen called the Zecher Tzadikulav. One may get an insight into his brilliance and his genius. But there's a lot here. There's a lot here. So let's just begin by learning the Gemara, raising some of the questions that have to be raised, And let's see how much we are, how much we're able to understand. The Gemara says the following: in the Braisa quoted above, Rabbi Yehuda, the Gemara had talked about Rabbi Yehuda, one of the Talmidim, and they introduced him as Rosh Hamidabrim Cholavo. He was the first of speakers at every place and at all great occasions. Rabbi Yehuda was the spokesman of the people. And the Gemara asks, why did they call Rabbi Yehuda that he was the first and foremost speaker in all places? So the Gemara relates how this occurred. The Yasmi Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon. It once happened that Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, and Rabbi Shimon, and Rabbi Shimon is Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, was sitting together. V'yosef Yehuda ben Galim Gabayu. Sitting with them was a fellow by the name of Yehuda ben Galim, the son of converts. Pasach Rabbi Yehuda v'ama. Rabbi Yehuda opened up because he opened the session. He is the first of speakers in all places. Rabbi Yehuda opened by saying, Kamenoam Ma'aseyen Shel Umazu, how admirable are the deeds of this nation. Who is he talking about? He's talking about the Romans who ruled Eretz Yisrael at the time. So you have to understand, of course, that the Romans were cruel, they were brutal, they subjugated the Jewish people in a terrible way. There were constant battles between Rome and the Jewish people. There was rebellion. They are the ones who put to death the 10 martyrs and Rabbi Akiva amongst them. And Rabbi Yehuda, you understand? Get some, how beautiful are the deeds of this nation. What nice things they do. My. And he's specific. It's not a general comment. It's a comment which he explains. They have established marketplaces. They built marketplaces. Tiknu Gishavim. They have established bridges over waterways. Tiknu Merchatzot. They have established bathhouses. Are they like that? Marketplaces, bridges, and bathhouses. Rav Yossi Shosak. Rav Yossi, who's sitting there, remained silent. Didn't make a comment. Didn't say a word. Nana Rav Shimon ben Yochai, Vama Rav Shimon Yochai, however, answered him and said, Kol ma shetiknu lo tiknu el tzorach atzman. Everything they did was selfish. It was only for them. They didn't have the interests of other people in mind or the interests of the community. Tiknu shvakim. They made marketplaces, lahushiv behem zonot, to have houses of prostitution there. Merchatzos, they had bed houses, la'adein behem atzman, to beautify their own bodies. You know, whenever you see something about Rome, they're always sitting around the pool in some bathhouse someplace. That was Rome. And they were not necessarily places very hygienic and healthy. All sorts of ugly things took place in the bathhouses too. And in Gishonim, they built bridges, Litomehemeches, to take taxes. You have to pay tolls. They collected tolls from people, all for themselves. The Gemara now relates, what was the aftermath of this discussion? All right, this took place somewhere in Eis Nefesh. Halach Yehuda ben Gadim v'sipir divrehem. Yehuda ben Gadim went and recounted their words. Now, the Gemara has to be understood. It doesn't mean he went to tell Rome. He didn't betray Reb Shimon ben Yochai. Reb Yehuda ben Gadim said it in the privacy of his own home, or to close and intimate friends. But you know, that's the way things are. Once the word is out, somehow it's going to make its way to the authorities. It will be interesting to note why do they identify him as Ben Galen, the son of converts. Is that significant or is it not significant? Is it sort of some kind of a remark, a negative remark about comments? So we'll see. Vinishmu Lamarkos, what happened was the authorities heard about this conversation. Amru, so the authorities then decided the following. Yehuda She'ilah, Yehuda who prays from Yit Allah, he shall be elevated to a position of great balance. Yossi Sheshatach, Yossi who remained silent and failed to praise the Romans, Yitlul Tzipori, he shall be expelled to the town of Tzipori. Doesn't say where the conversation took place. Somehow or other, I always have this feeling that it took place in Tiberia. The Tanoim, in a sense, divided their time between Tiberia and Tzipori. Rabbi Yudah Anasi, for example, who wrote the Mishnah, he spent winters in Tiberia and summers, no more than half an hour away by car, in Tzipori. Tzipori, the Gemara says, was called Tzipori because it's perched on the top of a mountain like a bird. Perched on the top of mountain, Tzipor. By the way, the view from Tzipor is absolutely magnificent. It certainly was a very, very strategic place. Anybody who held Tzipor held all of the surrounding area for many, many miles. And Tzipor, the weather is beautiful there. I understand why Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi was able to write the Mishnah, one of the greatest works in Jewish history. He wrote it when he was in Sipori, beautiful place. So I have a feeling they exiled him to Sipori. We have to understand why they exiled him to Sipori. I don't know if it would have taken him change to Rome. I can understand, but what's the exile to Sipori? And then Shimon, who spoke against the Romans, Yehoi, shall be executed. Also, upon hearing that there was a death sentence passed upon him, and Shimon ben Qayyim's son, Rabbi Elazar, ran away and hid in the Beis Medrash. Kol yama ha'amaiti lehu debitu, every day, Rabbi Shimon's wife would bring them rifta v'kusa demayim, uchrati, bread, a small pitcher of water, and they would eat. Ki takeh gizerto, when the decree intensified, in other words, the Romans, it seemed, were getting closer, and the Shimon and his son were now in far greater danger than they had been before. Amalei Lebrei, Rav Shimon said to his son, Noshin datom kala aleihem. The minds of women are easily swayed. I don't agree with that translation, and neither does... I know that this would be the point at which everybody would begin to get a little uppity, you know. Rav Kook over here says that this is not something negative about women. If it would have meant that they're a little flighty. Rav Kook says, then the Gemara would have said, Noshin Kala Datom. The Gemara says, Noshin Datom Kala. Completely different than Kala Datom. Kala Datom would mean that the word kala is describing and defining their intelligence, their intellect. That's not what's happening over here. So you can all get your danders back down. Datum kala means that they not easily sway. It's not sway. What it means that if they would torture them, and that's what Rome would have done, they will break easier than men. Because they're not built to take the kind of... they want to be like men, and they can walk like men, and they can talk like men, and they can work themselves to the bone like men, and come home easily measured at night like men. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about their physical ability to withstand pain and torture. Their pain level, their threshold is far, far lower than that of men. What they say.
The men from the Gemara never gave birth to children.
I have never been tested by a woman in my life until now. Just said that men have never given birth. So what you're saying is that if men would have to give birth, no children would be born. All right, the kasha is a good kasha, and the answer, of course, is most probably that the relation has given a woman that intense desire to be a mother, and the intensity of that desire is able to make her go through that pain time and time again. But that's not what we're talking about, being put on the rack someplace in a Roman dungeon. They will crack before men. It's a matter of degree, but in no way, shape, or form are we talking about their intelligence. That's the important thing, Rav Kook says, because it didn't say kala data. Their intellect is light. They're flighty. Kala, it's easier to influence them by torture. That's what we're talking about, torture. So therefore, he was afraid. Dilma mitzarila, and the Gemara, Rav Shimon Yochai explains exactly what he meant. Dilma mitzarila. Perhaps the Romans will torture your mother, umegaya lam, and she will reveal the hiding place. This is a very upright and fine Gemara, and nothing to find fault with. Also, Toshu Gemara, they mentioned hid themselves in a cave. This is the famous Gemara of Rav Shimon Yochai and his son are going to spend 12 years and then a 13th year in a cave. So they went and hid themselves in a cave. Now what it means is, they're in a cave, his wife is not bringing him bread and water every day for the two of them to eat. It rachish Lisa, a miracle happened. Ibri lehu charufa ve'enon demaya, a carob tree, and a stream of water were created for them. A miracle! A miracle! That's also going to be very significant. What's also going to be significant is, why a carob tree? That could have been maybe even an apple tree, or an orange tree, or a carob tree. Everything has meaning. They would take their clothing off and sit covered with sand all day as they studied Torah. Up until their neck in sand. All day they would study together. When time for davening arrived, they would dress, cover themselves, and pray. After they finished davening, they took off the clothing again, went back into the sand, and continued their study of Torah. The Marto, they dwelt in the cave, secluded for 12 years. Elio came and stood at the entrance to the cave, and he said, "Man lo di le bar yochi de nit kesar." Who's going to tell Bar Yochai that Caesar is dead? And therefore, when Caesar is dead, any decrees are annulled. There's no longer a price on Rav Shimon ben Yochai's head. Ubatal gezerto, the decree has been annulled. So Rav Shimon Yochai's son heard this and they emerged the cave. Chazulinji, they come out into the world. They have been separated from mankind, from the rest of the world, for 12 years. They come out and they saw the people that called Arabi, people who are plowing and sowing the field. Omar, second sign. Amar Rav Shimon ben Yochai was angered and he said, "Manichin chaye olam va'oskim bechaye shod." These people are forsaking the pursuit of life in the world to come and occupying themselves instead with the concerns of transitory life. What are you talking about? They're plowing and they're planting. Vastutz of God. They should be studying Torah. Kol makom shenot v'negayim. Wherever Rav Shimon ben Yochai and his son would cast their gaze beyond Yisrael, the object of their vision would immediately be incinerated, burned. Not so fast, a voice came out from heaven and said to them, "You came out of your cave to destroy my world. Chizrul l'aratem, back into your cave."
Before they went in, people
plowed and planted before they went in. But to understand, these people had spent 12 years achieving the very heights of spirituality. What they could have understood 12 years earlier, not after 12 years, 24, 12 years, day and night, the Shimon Yochai has risen to the level of becoming the author of the Zohar. We're talking about these are two people who have experienced the glory of the Rebbeinu Shlomo in all of its power and intensity. They think differently. They feel differently. Yes?
It's also because they lived for 12 years without needing anything, basically.
You're right. So they lived for 12 years without needing anything. That's right. So that's the level that they reached, that they simply, for the life of them, can't understand. Let me give you an example. It may not be a great example. There are times when I feel upset when I see Chilul Shabbos. Has it ever happened to anything to get upset when the city cools down? Doesn't this fella know how beautiful Shabbos is? He doesn't understand, right? They've reached a level of such profound spiritual heights. They don't understand, how is it possible for somebody to just go ahead and waste his time day and night and plowing and planting and reaping and harvesting and winnowing and grinding and baking and cooking? Couldn't understand it. They couldn't understand it. So God says, where are you then? I didn't take you out of your cave so that you should destroy my world. Back into the cave. Hodor also, so they both went and returned to the cave. 12 months passed, and they said, Mishpat Rishon B'Gehenna Mishnei Masa Kodesh. In Gehenna, the ultimate punishment is 12 months. 12 months are over, now we can come out into the world again. Yotzla Vasko V'Amra, out came a voice from heaven and said, Tzu'u Mimar Rachem, out of the cave, you can come out now. And the Tharkum, so they came out, and they again saw people seeking their livelihood through ordinary means. Kol Heicha Da'ave Lachi, Rebbe Elazar. Now what a fascinating thing happens over here. Reb Shimon Yochai already has learned to appreciate the common folk, his son, the younger hothead generation. You know, we have the youth of the hills, this is the youth of the caves. He comes out and he's still as excited as he was. So what happens over here is a clash. Wherever Reb Shimon's son, Reb Elazar, looks, it's incinerated and destroyed. And Reb Shimon Yochai would look and everything would return to what it originally was. There's a profound idea over here. The profound idea over here is sometimes real difference of opinion that is expressed can ultimately bring two people to a creative mode. You needed Rabbi Eliezer on the one hand and his father of Shimon Ben Yochai. There's so much more, right? Anyway, where are we now? Okay. Have a Toshi, have a Masi, Reb Shimon, Reb Shimon's father would heal. Amalo, Reb Shimon said to his son, Pini, Daila Olam Anivatam. The world has enough. Just the two of us being totally devoted to Torah is enough. And here the English translation is good. We don't have to hold anybody else to the great standards that we've set for ourselves. It's okay. We can all inhabit the same world. The world needs all of those people out there plowing and planting. And by the way, this is a Gemara in the Sefer the Shabbos. Brothers. There is a... This may only be... I may just happen to have it here. There is an focus between Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai and Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai says, "Im adam chodesh b'shas chadisha v'zoreya b'shas zeriya." If a person is going to plow at the time of planting, and he is going to plant seeds at the time of planting, and he's going to harvest at the time of harvesting. Torah mata he'olah. What's going to be with Torah? If people are going to be involved in all of the mundane yet necessary aspects of this world, what's going to be with Torah? And Rabbi Yishmael said, "No, hanhei v'hem min ha'derechez." Rav Shimon Yochai was basing himself on the pasuk of V'hagita v'yom v'alayim. You should study Torah day and night. Day and night is day and night. Finish. Day and night is day and night. He doesn't understand any chametz. And Rabbi Shmuel said, no, it says in Kriyat Shema, Vosafta the Gonecha, Vitiroshcha, Vitzarecha. If you're going to listen to God, God is going to bring rain, there will be abundance, and you will gather in the harvest of the fields. So he says, take a look what the Torah says. The Jew has to harvest and plant and plow and winnow, have to do that. So this is machlokes between the two of them. The Shimon Yochai on one hand says, Torah, nothing else. And Yishmael says, Hanheg behem minat derechet. Conduct himself with Torah, you know, all Torah and no work makes Yankala a problematic kind of boy. So you know what you do? Torah and Malacha. You have to learn, you have to set aside time and study Torah, you have to have a profession, you have to make a living. There's nothing wrong with the word work. W-O-R-K. Nothing wrong. The Gemara goes on to say, Harbin also could have Shimon ben Yochai for many who conducted themselves like Rav Shimon ben Yochai will also be of them, and they didn't succeed. They failed. The Harbin also many did like Rabbi Yishmael, Torah and Melacha will also be of them, and they succeeded. Yes?
I'm reminded of before Am Yisrael did not want to come to Eretz Israel because they knew they would have to stop learning and start working to support themselves. This is not a...
And they wanted the ideal existence of the desert. Yes. Okay, that's one of the... All right, okay, wait. Let me tell you, I'm going to fast forward through Shas. This machlokes between Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai appears in the Sefer Brachos, the first Sefer. First Sefer in Shas. Zvachim is one of the last Sefers, toward the end of Shas. The end of Shas, hey, you know what Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai says? This same Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai who's burning people, incinerating them because they're plowing and planting. The Gemara says over there, you should study Torah day and night. And Rav Shimon ben Yochai says, if a person says Kriya Shema in the morning and Kriya Shema at night, he has fulfilled the mitzvah of you should study Torah day and night. Do you understand what a tremendous transformation has taken place in this Rav Shimon ben Yochai? There are times that I have a feeling that this may have been the reason why he became the great folk hero. By his nature, by his bent, by his inclination, he could not understand the common Jew. He couldn't understand them. He's going through a process over here where he's going to learn. Ultimately, he's going to learn to appreciate the plain Jew. I never like using the term plain Jew. No Jew is plain. A Pasha Tahid is a profound description. Because there's no such thing as a Pasha Tahid. This Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai begins to appreciate and understand them. I'm going to see it toward the end of this tomorrow here. And that's what takes place. He goes through a whole process through all Shas until he comes to the point where he says, if you just said Kriyat Shema in the morning and Kriyat Shema in the evening, you have fulfilled the mitzvah of studying Torah. And Klal Yisrael understood that the great Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai had learned to appreciate and respect him, and therefore they come there hundreds of thousands every year to his camp. All right, let's finish the piece of Gemara. Oh, this is a very nice piece. The end. The Panya de Malashata. As night began to fall late Friday afternoon, Chosu Ha'u Saba, Rav Shimon and his son saw a certain old man, the Havinoket Trey Midonei Asa, who was clutching two bundles of hadassim, myrtles. Verogit, and he was running, Bein Hashmatos, as evening begins to descend. On the lay, they said to him, Han Domalach, one of these two bundles of Hadassim that you have. Amal Ahu, he said to them, L'chvot Shabbos. They are in honor of Shabbos. Amal Ahu, so they're L'chvot Shabbos. So they asked him, V'tizbi L'chvot B'chav, what do you need two for? Have one bundle of Hadassim. So this old man said to them, Chav k'neged Zohar, b'chav k'neged Shomar. One is for the mitzvah of Zohar at Yom HaShabbos, the other is for the mitzvah of Shomar at Yom HaShabbos. Amal Eil Brei, Rav Shimon Yehoi said to his son, Chazei, take a look, kama chavivin mitzvahs and Israel, take a look at how cherished and beloved mitzvahs are to the Jewish people. Yosef Taitayu. And finally, Rav Shimon ben Yochai and his son were at peace. They've gone through 13 or more years until they finally learned what a Pasha de Altehiv is. It will be interesting to note that this old Jew is running. He's running. It says he's running with the two with his two bundles of Hadassah. It could be that the Gemara over here is also telling us where the minute of buying flowers on Erev Shabbos, coming home, you don't have to buy two bunches. Rav Kook is going to say, I want to say it now. We don't have to wait to go through. We have a difficult time getting through all of this, but whatever we get out of it, we get out of it. He says, you know what the Rebbeinu was showing Rav Shimon ben Yochai and his son? The elderly are supposed to be those whose enthusiasm and sort of, you know, that excitement with life has begun to wane. It's not the same, not what it was. The Rebbeinu says, a Jew who studies Torah and performs mitzvahs, it gives him a sense of purpose and meaning in life, and this old fellow can be running Erev Shabbos like a youngster in order to bring those two bubbles. Torah rejuvenates and regenerates the Jew by virtue of the fact that it gives meaning, it gives purpose, it gives substance to life. There are young people who may jog 10 miles a day, and inside, you understand, they're dead at a doornail. There's nothing that moves them, but there's nothing that shakes them. They have no goal, they have no purpose. Good. And after they've run the 10 miles, they come home, I don't know, and lose themselves on the internet someplace, and you have to let time, you have to do something with time. Whereas this elderly gent, this senior citizen, is running with a burst of joy. Erev Shabbos, get home and bring the two merchants. All right. Now, let's try and start all over again. What was the... Yes? Oh, you want to know the character?
Yeah, why not?
That. Okay. So it will be out of order, but I can explain what it is. The purpose of the carob tree, by the way, the purpose of a miracle that there should be water and a carob tree. I mean, they could have ended up in a cave where there was a carob or other tree nearby. It could have been a cave where there were all sorts of rivers, streams. This country has a tremendous amount of mayanot. Go talk to your Englach or anybody who's hiked around there to throw. I have a few of them that you put them down any place in the country, and they'll sniff their way to the closest mayan. Water, it's all over. You'll see my big Allah harmos, Rabbi Yosef. All over the country. They know exactly where they are. Why did it have to be this way? So Rav Kook here develops the following idea. The idea is that Rav Yisrael wants Rav Shimon ben Yochai and his son to be removed completely from any kind of contact with civilization or society. Even the water they drink and the carrot they eat, divine, completely divine. They are going to rise to great heights, and from those heights, the Rebbeinu wants them to bring them back, that they should be able to appreciate the plain, simple, good Jew who studies Torah and performs business. The carrot. What's the most famous story in Talmud about a carrot tree? Carrot tree. Choni Hamagol. Choni Hamagol sees a fellow who's planting a carrot tree. So he asks him, why are you planting this tree? When will it finally give fruits? He says, 70 years. 70 years. He says, you're not going to be around here 70 years from now. What are you planting it for? So he says, I have it because my Zeta planted it 70 years ago. I want to make sure that my grandchildren are going to have a carrot tree. And in order to prove it to Choni Hamagol, he fell asleep, and he woke up 70 years later, and he sees this gorgeous carob tree, and young people are taking carobs off the tree. Who are you? He finally realizes that he slept 70 years. These are the grandchildren. These are the grandchildren who are now taking the carobs off the tree. You know why God makes a carob tree for him? Because he wants to point out to him that the ultimate of Torah is to make certain that everything is going to be passed on from generation to generation. Everything that you're going to learn in these years that you're going to spend, everything you're going to learn in these years in the grave, are going to have the purpose of preparing you to understand the power, the ultimate power and the strength of the Jewish people that continues on from history, from generation to generation. The carob tree represents the ongoing and unfolding events of Jewish history. But let's get back to the story. What was the machlokes over here between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon Yochai? Rabbi Yehuda is the one who praises Rome for their bridges, for their marketplaces, and for their bathhouses. Now, Rav Kook notices something very fascinating. If you go back to the beginning, Rav Yehuda opens up and he says, how beautiful are the deeds of this nation, and the order in which he describes them are, he cites marketplaces, bridges, bathhouses. When Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai is going to attack Rome, he's not going to use that order. He says whatever they made, whatever they established, was only for themselves. Marketplaces for harlots. And if the marketplaces, he doesn't talk about the bridges, but he talks about bathhouses. That's the meaning and significance to that. To that too. So we have to understand, why did Rav Yehuda say what he said? Why does Rav Yossi remain silent? Why does Rav Shimon ben Yochai say what he says? So Rav Kook explains the following. The fact is that all of these three things that were done by Rome were a great benefit to the citizens of Eretz Yisrael, or for that matter, any other country in the world where they did. The marketplaces represent the economy. For a country to be able to survive and to thrive and to live and to grow, you have to have a vibrant economy. An economy that's in dread, is not going to serve anybody's purposes. The next thing, bridges. What do bridges represent? Bridges represent a number of things. One of the most important is to be able to facilitate the communication and transportation of people from one place to the next. It brings people closer. And it represents not only transportation, it also represents the idea of communication. If people can move more easily from one place to the next, then people will engage in communicating with one another. That's a very important thing. Aside from the practical aspects of the, sure, you put up a kish, yesh, it cuts an arrow off the time that one has to drive from Yerushalayim to Afula. It's great, it's great. You don't have to swim across rivers, you can just cross bridges. Bridges are important. Bridges really represent bridges between people, and this is extremely important. The bathhouses, government has a fundamental responsibility to be concerned about the health and the hygiene of all the people of the country. That represents what we need to make sure that the water is clean, to make sure that there are no mosquitoes or other things. So there's the whole hygiene is department of health and welfare, very, very important. These are the three most important aspects of what government has to do for its people. And Rabbi Yehuda says, listen, the Romans have done this, and therefore we have a responsibility to say Yashar Koyach, or at least realize that this is very much in our benefit. Rabbi Yehuda also knows, make no mistake, Rabbi Yehuda also knows that along with all of the great Roman accomplishments, there's a byproduct. What comes along with it is torture, terror, Jews dying on the cross, burned at the stake. He doesn't forget about all of that, but he says we have to look at the other side too. And there's something so contemporary about what Rabbi says over here. When you find yourself in that kind of a position, you don't get to the level. We're under the heel of Rome. Rome rules in Eretz Israel. Just to emphasize the places at which we clash is not going to help the population. What's going to help is if at least we can find certain points at which there is some meeting of the mind. Just to diminish the amount of struggle that will take place between the two nations. We're living through a difficult time. Of course it's a difficult time. You think it's Gan Eden and Eretz Yisrael with Rome, it's Gehenna and Rome. But nothing is going to be accomplished, according to Rabbi Yehuda, if we'll only emphasize the negative. I mean, you have to find some point of reference at which there can be some kind of communication between the tyrannical Rome and the Jewish people. And in a sense, in all negotiation, that's exactly what happens. What do you have to do? You have to look for the points at which, well, we agree on this and we agree on that. We want peace, you understand? You want peace, I want peace, right? Right? Now the question is, at what price? And who has to pay the price? But you have to find the point at which the two opposites meet. Rabbi Yossi remains silent because he finds himself on the horns of the dilemma. Yes, they've done good things, but I'm mechel at all the good things, zones against brechen hen. To understand and get out of this country. I'm welcome them their bridges, I'm welcome them their bathhouses, I am welcome them their economy. So he's caught in this struggle. He can't praise them because they are evil. The Gemara always refers to Rome as Umar Harashah, the evil nation. Evil nation. He cannot condemn them because, yeah, we are. We do have benefit. We are benefiting from that. Along comes Rav Shimon ben Yochai. Rav Shimon ben Yochai is uncompromising. He says they made marketplaces. All right, marketplaces. Fuel the economy. Get it all going. People are making money. But he gives a nice mashal. Somebody builds out factories. People are employed. You leave work, and not far from there is a casino. You understand? And what's going to happen with all of their hard-earned salary? They're going to dump it down the drain over there by the casino, and all the money is going to go right back to the fellow who built the factories. The whole thing is made so that they can produce and then soak the people. Yes? The muscle that Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai is using, yes, they have they've created an economy, but in that economy they have put places at which people are going to be enticed to dump all of their money and their money's down the drain. Since this is what he said about the economy, so he goes from there directly to the bathhouses. In the bathhouses, he says, he puts bathhouses in the middle of Shimon Yochai, because bathhouses really explains both of them. The bathhouses are made by Romans completely for their own pleasure. Everything is for their own pleasure. And therefore, that explains to us why they made the shvakim, the plazas, the... What word am I looking for? Huh? You know, big, Walmart, you know, all of that stuff. Those are the shvakim. The purpose is for their own benefit. They don't have anybody else in mind. And therefore and what do they have in mind? The pursuit of personal, physical pleasure. There's nothing spiritual at all about Rome. Rome is completely material, completely physical. And Gishorim, so then the bridges, they're not interested in whether people are going to be able to travel from one place to the next, or that they will be able to get their produce to the market. It's not for the betterment of the people. The purpose is because there's going to be tolls on the bridges, there's going to be tax on whatever money they make, and all that Rome is interested is to make sure that the people will live in poverty. And therefore, don't tell me, Rabbi Yehuda, about all the great things at Rome. So then, Yehuda then gave it, and here, Rav Kook explains it, and others explain it, that Chas v'Shalom, he didn't go ahead and tell the Roman authorities what Rabbi Yehuda and what Rav Shimon ben Yochai said. Not that. But here, Rav Kook is going to say something that may very well, strike you a little. Strange. He says there are certain basic and fundamental inborn national feelings that Jews have. A ger tzedek, a real ger who loves Klal Yisrael, will acquire through the process of conversion, he's going to acquire those innate feelings. If his conversion is not that perfect in terms of his inner motivation, it will take time. Rashi brings it in Parashat Yitro, I believe, a ger Don't insult a goy in his presence until 10 generations have passed. It may take 10 generations for them to feel the geschmack and the inner natural instincts of the Jew. The natural instinct of the Jew is shock. Can't say anything that might possibly come to the attention of the authorities. Rabbi Yossi, who was present, didn't breathe a word to anybody in the world. Rabbi Yehuda ben Gaden meant no harm, but he just didn't yet have what was necessary for him to feel the way a Jew feels fully. You know what really emerges from the Gemara? Who is the one that the divine shines down upon? Rabbi Yehuda or Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai? Heaven is on whose side? Heaven, the fact is that heaven is on the side of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda is Rosh HaNedarim, the one who is the spokesman for Klal Yisrael in all places. Why? Because the fact is, he understands that as long as we are under Rome, then we have to know how to live with them. And if knowing how to live with them means that we should recognize that which they are doing for us, then that's how we have to do it. It brings me to another fascinating Gemara. Gemara that I've spoken about years ago. Briefly, I'm just going to say the Gemara now. We'll find another time to go through the rest of it. There's a Gemara in the Sefer Megillah where the Gemara says the students of Rav Shimon ben Yochai asked their Rebbe, why was there a threat of destruction upon all Jews in the world in the days of Mordechai and Esther? 700 years after the event, they're asking why was there a near Holocaust in the days of Mordechai and Esther? So Rav Shimon ben Yochai doesn't respond to his students. He says to them, strange answer, in Latin, you tell me. I imagine he assumes that a question of that sort, they certainly thought about it, they came up with something. So they said, yeah, because they enjoyed the party of Ahasuerus. Jews went to the party of Ahasuerus. Ahasuerus is celebrating the fact that according to his calculations, Jews are not going to be redeemed. And Jews are celebrating it. It's unbelievable. It staggers the imagination. I don't know how they went to that party. That whole fashion party was to celebrate Jews having to remain in exile, according to Mahasheer. How did they do it anyway? So Rav Shimon Yochai said, because of the party, that's why it was a threat of destruction. So that should have been on the Jews of Shushan. What do you want from the Jews in the whole world? Good question. So they said to their Rebbe, Rav Shimon Yochai, Rebbe, you tell us. So he said, I'll tell you why. Because they bowed down to the statue of Nebuchadnezzar 45 years earlier. The Purim story is already 10, 15 years into the Persian Empire. When Nebuchadnezzar, who had established the Babylonian Empire some 45 years earlier, 50 years earlier, had erected a statue in the Valley of Dura, and he called upon all people to bow down before that statue. And we talked about that a few weeks ago, when we talked about the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem v'Nikdash Tikatov B'nei Yisrael. Three people didn't bow down, Hanaya, Mishael, and Azar. So Rav Shimon Yochai tells his students, because Jews bowed down to that statue, that's why there was a threat of destruction. So why did it wait 45, 50 years? Latest, I believe, when it happened over here is the problem. The fact is that there was no Aveira, there wasn't the sin of Aveira Zara, there wasn't idolatry. He erected a statue to himself, and he wanted people to, I pledge allegiance to Nebuchadnezzar and all the miserable things he stands for, you know, one nation under Nebuchadnezzar. It was a pledge of allegiance. But you know what Rav Shimon Yochai is saying? The moment Jews made that first compromise, that we are now citizens of this great country and we have to conduct ourselves like citizens, even if there are distasteful things that we have to do, that was the beginning of the end. That Shimon ben Yochai is opposed to compromise. Rav Shimon ben Yochai will not compromise with Rome. Rav Shimon ben Yochai will not compromise with Babel, nor with Persia. Rav Shimon ben Yochai is opposed to any kind of compromise. Rav Yehuda is not. Rav Shimon ben Yochai represents the ideal. Rav Yehuda represents the reality of life. And the reality and the ideal don't necessarily come together. In Hebrew, there's a good term for this. Rag of my brain, I think there's one in English, and I don't know what it is, or I forgot. There is the Ratsui and the Matsui. The Ratsui is the ideal. This is what we want. You don't always have the ideal. You know what you have to live with? The Matsui. Matsui means the reality on the ground, what you have right now. Rabbi Yehuda represented the Matsui. He was a man with 2 feet on solid ground in this world, and he knew how one has to conduct themselves with the Romans. Rabbi Shimon Yochai was the idealist. He soared to heights that had not been reached before. He lives in that cave, completely separated from all of society, except for one thing. I'll get this in. You know what? You should have asked me not only about the character. You should have asked me about his clothing. They took off their clothing all day, and they put their clothing on for davening. And after davening, they took the clothing off again. So our cook says the following: the only thing that they had with themselves in the cave that was related to the real world had been made by other human beings, not like his carob tree and his water that were made miraculous, but that there was one thing. There was one thing that represented the real world of people. That was their clothing. When it comes to davening, you have to understand you're not davening for yourself. You're davening for all of Klal Yisrael. Tefillah is in the plural. You pray for Klal Yisrael, for Refuah, for Yeshua. And therefore, Rav Shimon ben Yochai and his sons have to be clothed in something that represents all that the world around them creates. You finish davening, go back into your world of the great ideal, remove your clothing, and in a sense separate yourself from all. The ultimate, of course, is, as I said, that comes the day that Rav Shimon ben Yochai, I'm not sure about his son, but Rav Shimon ben Yochai comes all the way down. No, maybe he doesn't come down. You know what happens? He sees in far profounder perspective the heights that an old Jew can reach by running Erev Shabbos with 2 bundles of Hadassah. Our Chavivin, how Jews love Torah and they love mitzvahs. Rav Shimon ben Yochai saw God didn't create a world where everybody has to float around in the spheres in which he inhabits. But he appreciated the Jew who says Shema Yisrael in the morning and Shema Yisrael at night. That was the great lesson that he learned in this Gemara. And Sheikh Yavo, to be continued at some point in the Harov future.